What's up, guys? Welcome back to another daily Bible reading snapshot. Today, we're looking at 1 Chronicles 3, 4, and 5 here in the Old Testament. And something that we should kind of get under our belt as we continue to read a bunch of names today is, why is it even important that we read these names? First of all, it's important because these are real people, real events. But I think maybe something that's more important is it helps us understand and get us into the mindset of the first and original audience of this book. A big thing that's going on here as this book is being received by the people of Israel is they're going back into the land. And I really see there's a parallel here, but between the beginning of 1 Chronicles, as the people are numbered again, there's tribes, there's people that are listed, there's family trees that are listed, all that's going on. It really throws us back to the book of Numbers, at the beginning and end of the book of Numbers, as the people were numbered at the beginning of the time of the wilderness wanderings and at the end of the wilderness wanderings. We kind of have another one of those. The people are listed, families are talked about, so that when they enter the land, they are all recorded. And one of the things we see here is the family of David, the family of Judah, the family of Simeon, the family of Reuben, and the family of Gad specifically, and Manasseh, half tribe of Manasseh. That's what we read today. So the names you see are going to be familiar, I mean, some of them, especially in chapter 3, as you see David and his sons, you see some of the kids that he bore, but also the line of kings. If you look at verse 10 all the way down to verse 16, those should be familiar names to you because those are the kings we just studied before in the book of 1st and 2nd Kings. So we see Solomon, Rehoboam, and it goes all the way down the list to Zedekiah, the last king of Judah. And he was the last king of Judah, but there's another name down there. I have it circled in my Bible. It's the name Zerubbabel. Zerubbabel is going to be the leader of the people as they go back into the land. So we see all these names, and without kind of understanding the flow of the biblical history, a lot of these names we kind of just gloss over. But I want you to think about this. See if you recognize some names. Maybe look up some of these names that you recognize and see what part they played in biblical history. Obviously, not all of them did very much. Some of them are just listed here, and we don't see them in other places in the Bible. But I just want you to imagine if you were this generation of Israelites going back into the land after the exile, it would be really important to have this family tree to lean on and to remember. And also, as they go back to tribal allotments, in some cases, they need to know who their parents were. They need to know who their great-great-great-grandparents were. And this book serves as a catalog of that. So that's our reading in 1 Chronicles today. I would suggest if you could, maybe listen to this section. Obviously read along, but if you listen to this section, it'll help you with some of the names, because if you don't listen to every name, you might just kind of gloss over the list of names. So that's just a tip for reading genealogy. It's helpful for me, at least, to have it read out loud to me as I look at the page. So, all right, that is our Old Testament reading today. In the New Testament, we've run across a very interesting scene in the book of John. If you've got a Bible out, you might notice that it has a bunch of brackets around it, two brackets on each side in this first section of John 8. And that's because this section, verses 53, so John 7, 53 to 8, 11, it says at the top, the earliest manuscripts do not include this. So there's a couple of important things for us to get down right here. First of all, we do not believe that this section right here was originally written by John, which I know sounds like a shock. Why is it in the Bible? We'll talk about that in a minute, but a couple of reasons why we don't think this is here. First of all, that reason that's given up at the top, the earliest manuscripts do not include this section. And the reason this is listed is because the first manuscripts that we have of the Gospel of John, remember, we do not have the original. We don't have the one that John wrote. We have copies. And we have so many copies, that's helpful, that we can compare them to one another. And all of the earliest copies we have of the Gospel of John, before the 5th century, this section never showed up. So the first time we see this section showing up in this gospel, in this place, is in the 5th century. Think about that, in the 400s. And we only have one that does that. So the rest of them show up much later on. So all the early manuscripts of John skip straight from John 7:52 right into John 8:12, which actually pairs up these narratives, which it actually seems like John 8:12 is just picking up on the same story that John 7:52 was leaving off at. Also, another thing, when this section is found in certain manuscripts, it's moved around all over the place. It shows up here sometimes. It shows up at the end of the Gospel of John sometimes. It even shows up in the book of Luke sometimes. So this little section right here from these, what, 12 verses here, it doesn't seem like this was original to John. Now, that doesn't mean that this story didn't happen. It's possible that this story happened and that through word of mouth it was talked about and somebody ended up writing it down, and because they thought this was a true story, maybe they added it in the 5th century. Don't really know the reasons for it, but it's here because it made it into later manuscript traditions. So a lot of the manuscripts we have after the 12th century include this right here. And because it ended up in the manuscript that made what we know as the KJV, it became very popular in English. So if translations were to take it out, it would really scare people and freak people out and say, what happened to this section? Because it's very traditionally well known. So those are a couple reasons. Also, the style is different here. The way that it's written, the vocabulary is unique. John does not use some of these words, like the Mount of Olives is not mentioned in the Gospel of John. Also, the idea of the scribes is not mentioned. So whoever wrote this down, I don't think it was John, whoever wrote it down probably wrote it with a good knowledge of the other Gospels, which just makes sense. If you remember when we were looking at Mark chapter 16, that was the other big section that was similar to this, probably not written by Mark, but probably written later by people who knew the Gospel of Mark and the Gospel of Matthew and the Gospel of Luke. Same thing here. The mention of the scribes, the way that the Pharisees are depicted, it seems like someone who knew these Gospels wrote this later on. So do not be discouraged when you look at this and say, wow, how did this end up in my Bible? I would encourage you, don't feel discouraged by this. Actually, feel encouraged that we can know what was in the original manuscript of John. We can know that because we compare the old manuscripts and we don't think this was originally here. But this is here just because it's been preached on and people know about it. So that's why the ESV and other translations like it include it. But they want to warn you at the top, the earliest manuscripts don't include this. So this probably was not original. So that's a long conversation about this manuscript, but hopefully that's helpful for you. But I just want you to now focus on John 8:12, because it is, I believe, an extension of what's going on in the last chapter. When, remember, we're at this feast, we've got this division among the people. Jesus stood up and said that as the scriptures will be fulfilled, that out of his heart will flow rivers of living water. He's promising the Holy Spirit. He says, if anyone comes to me and anyone thirsts, I will give him a drink. And the drink is that they will have the Holy Spirit in them forever. All that is promised. Now in John 8:12, Jesus again spoke to them saying, I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. I think that's important because at this festival that Jesus is at, there's two main symbols that this festival utilized. One of them was about water, where they'd pour out water in this ceremony. Another was about lights at night. I think what Jesus is doing is he's saying, I'm the one who can give true water and I'm the one who can give true light. He's using the symbolism of the festival itself to say something about himself. And what he says about himself is, he's the only one that satisfies. He will give the Spirit. And also, he's the light of the world, which means he speaks the truth. And he goes on. As you read this today, you'll see all the amazing things that Jesus says. In particular, he says, even if I were to bear witness about myself, it's also true that the Father bears witness about me. And all the works I do bear witness about me, which sounds a lot like what we looked at in John 7, also in John 5. So this all fits together, and I want you to have more confidence in the Bible after listening to this today, because this story fits together in how John originally wrote it, that we're dealing with the same festival here. And we can be thankful that Jesus is the light of the world, that Jesus does tell us the truth. And without Jesus' special revelation that he's given to us, we would not know the truth in the same way. So we're thankful for what Jesus has done, and we're also thankful that we have this Bible that we can truly trust. So thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for another daily Bible reading snapshot.